This morning was like a printing frenzy because we were trying to get all these packets together, and now we're just noticing that our microphones have been bolted down for perfect sound, right? So we're all good. And so, you know, now that our housekeeping is out of the way, it's a pretty exciting morning here. So we are, this is one of our organizational committee meetings, really information gathering and building and strengthening our partnerships with folks that are doing great work in St. Paul and the greater metro area. So today we have Peter Frosch from Greater MSP, Andrea Furstand from Greater Metropolitan Workforce, Ling Becker from Ramsey County Workforce Solutions, which I thought was Workforce Solutions of Ramsey County. No,
first one,
great. Yeah. Who we'll hear from in the order that I read. And then we are, Ms. Houston said, we have a lot of ground to cover today. The fifth item on our agenda beyond welcome and introductions is city workforce development work with Catherine Pinkert, Kristen Guild, Erica Prosser, Shana Abraham from Right Track. And we're going to try to stay on track, recognizing that there's a lot of ground to cover in an hour and a half. And so if we end up needing to recall our city departments, we will do that. I think that was your advice today, is beware it could happen, but we will try to keep us moving along. So it's exciting to have you here. We can't wait to hear. A lot of times as we go through a presentation, we'll just kind of ask questions as they come up rather than wait to the end, if that's okay with you. But you're welcome to say, that's the next slide, and then we'll be patient and wait till you get to the next slide. So with that, let's start out with Peter Frosch.
Well, good morning, members of the council. It's a pleasure to be with you today. I was invited to provide, I think, some context, you know, at a regional level around the workforce conversation, which we're going to have today, which I will do quickly, or as quickly as possible. We'll probably get pretty detailed today talking about workforce, so I wanted to start at a fairly high level to say that in some ways it's very simple, in the sense that, you know, human capital is the most important thing to our economy. Like, that is what we're good at. It's what we've always been good at. It's becoming more important for us and every other developed economy in the country and the world. So basically, there's nothing more important to our economy. Also, as we think about this community, you know, we're becoming an increasingly diverse community racially, and we continue to underperform in terms of including all members of our community in economic opportunity. And if that continues, there's no hope for us to be as good as we are today, much less any better. So, you know, our inclusion imperative has totally come together with our economic imperative. It's not two different conversations. It's the same destiny. And although there's a lot of uncertainty about where the economy is going, both nationally and globally, one thing seems to be fairly clear, that just the more education any individual has and the more concentration you have of highly educated people, the better off you are as a person and as a family, and the better off you are as an economy. So beyond that, it gets really complicated.
I was going to say, drop the mic and get out of here.
But, you know, I mean, there are some things that are fairly clear. So quickly, just from a definitional standpoint, I'm the CEO of Greater MSP, the Regional Economic Development Partnership for the Minneapolis-St. Paul region, 15 counties. Greater MSP is a partnership of hundreds of organizations and thousands of people doing work. The city of St. Paul, I'm proud to say, is a founding investor and partner in Greater MSP. The Greater MSP exists to provide certain functions for the region. One of them is tracking the performance of the region, benchmarking against others. And so part of what I'm doing today is part of what Greater MSP exists to do, which is to provide that kind of overall data-driven context. Once we know how we're doing, what are we going to do? So having a shared strategy that, you know, aligns and drives all kinds of organizations across the region. Workforce is central in the regional strategy because it's going to take everybody. We also work to do the execution work at scale of aligning partners, and that's absolutely about business investment, retaining, expanding, attracting companies. That's still very much a part of Greater MSP. It's not the only thing going on, and the way it happens today is very connected to the workforce conversation, like in ways that wasn't entirely true 8 years ago. Greater MSP and the City of St. Paul are pretty deeply engaged, I'm excited to say, at this moment across a number of different areas, including workforce. So a couple of the big ideas to provide some context. So workforce is a regional issue. cities and counties and organizations, companies have workforce challenges and needs and priorities, but we have to understand it exists as a regional ecosystem. So 77% of jobs in St. Paul are filled by people who don't live in the city, and 69% of people who live in St. Paul work somewhere else. And that's, there's nothing wrong with that. That's just a reflection of how, this is why we're a region, this is why we work together as a region. We have one regional labor force. People are coming in and out every day. And that chart for St. Paul is pretty similar to the chart we see in Minneapolis in almost every other community across the region. It's kind of surprisingly similar in terms of proportion.
And we had the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce come in and speak with us at one point, and they said that the government sector, the public sector, was the highest employer in the city of St. Paul, but it wasn't even on the top 10 list of what people who lived in St. Paul did for work. Mm-hmm. So that it definitely reflects what we're seeing here in the data.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone has stood over the, as I do sometimes, the Skyway at 4:15 in the afternoon and watched the line of cars, you know, go out of St. Paul to the suburbs, like, you know, that dynamic is real. So as I introduced, you know, a skilled, highly engaged labor force is our region's top competitive advantage. That's always been true. It's important in every regional economy, especially for us, because we have a knowledge economy in Minneapolis-St. Paul. We rely on human capital. This is becoming even more important for everybody. And in some ways, the whole game of like retaining and attracting jobs is shifting onto our territory, because this is something we've always been good at. We think we're good at this. We try to invest in this. And there's a note here about in 2018, the survey of site selectors nationally listed the availability of skilled labor as the most important location factor. That's not what that looked like 5 or 6 years ago. Right, so that has been, it's always been on the list, but it's been moving up the list. And on the right-hand side, you can see kind of from a region level and then from the city of St. Paul, you know, some of the kind of stats that demonstrate that, you know, we're growing labor force. We, you know, a big idea that's to be understood about this region is that people here work at incredibly high rates across all skill levels, across all the region, across race and this ethnicity. We, across the 100 largest metros in the country, are second highest for labor force participation. And we're the highest of any major U.S. metro. And that's been true pretty consistently for years and years and years. And that's a huge asset that people work here. And then you can see some of our performance in terms of, you know, how we over-index on concentration of educated workforce. This is an interesting and unique moment where we are really tight on labor. So unemployment in this region, the numbers that just came in for September had us at 2.9% unemployment in this region. That's very, very low. You know, in high demand occupations, it's essentially 0% unemployment. For workers, that's good. We also saw in the data for last month that wage growth in this region was up by 6.1% year over year. That's very high. The U.S. wage growth year over year was 3.3%. So this is good for people, right? So this current situation, we're seeing, you know, wages increase, and that's really important. However, we also know that we're kind of on the wrong side, you know, of this coin, that we're too tight. And the result is our analysis shows our economic growth is about half of what it would be if we had the workers we need. And that's not just an academic point. I mean, that's many more jobs. That's many billions of dollars of investment. I mean, everything that we think of that good that comes from the economy, like twice as much if we had the people we need. So this is really urgent. This is not a someday issue. This is a today issue. We are too short. We know that there are people that are in our communities who are not fully engaged in the workforce. Like, that matters to everybody.
Is Greater MSP engaged at all in the resettlement numbers with refugees and immigrants? I think the president made a decision that we're at an all-time low in terms of number of folks that are allowed to come into the country. The council is today voting on a resolution, you know, urging the president to increase that number for this very reason. I mean, we're Minneapolis-St. Paul, and the Greater MSP is an area that has always been a resettlement location mm-hmm. for immigrants and refugees, and we know that they're, to your points, all the points that you've made so far, they're crucial to our economy. Have you engaged at all on that issue?
engaged in the sense that we're tracking very closely, and we know that this is one of the things we measure on the dashboard, that new Americans work at incredibly high rates in our economy. So not only do they add to the vibrancy of our communities, but they're really material, to your point, to the economy, and that's more true here than it is in other regions or peers across the country. We also saw a pretty sharp there was a major fall off in the last kind of 20 months in terms of international migration into the Minneapolis-St. Paul region, and that's a population challenge for us because we had really relied on international migration. It was one of the main drivers. We've conversely seen a major uptick in domestic migration into this market, so it's kind of blunting the overall number. So domestic up, international way down has a big impact on us. It matters.
Ms. Anker.
Thank you.
Mr. Posh, how does...
Gosh, I really want to adjust this. Oh, it's not bolted down. It's just really sticky.
Okay, sorry.
Housekeeping. How does that 188,000 employment gap compare to other regions or other states in the country? Because I know part of this, obviously it's an astounding number in and of itself, but part of this is about competitiveness nationally and internationally. So are we worse at this than other places?
We are going to be, if we look at Austin, if we look at Denver, if we look at Seattle, if we look at San Francisco, fast-growing, highly competitive, globally connected economies that we benchmark against, they're facing something similar. The way they put their workforce together sometimes looks a little different. I mean, a lot of those places rely more than we have in the past on external migration into those markets. But the major growing metros like MSP are all facing something like this. I mean, nobody's in some sort of a Goldilocks situation at the moment because some of the underlying challenges we're facing in this region and state are systematic in terms of federal funding and state approaches that other places similarly struggle with. So, I mean, it's an objective challenge. But I would also say I think we have a unique opportunity to figure this out, you know, and excel. So when I talk about this as a unique moment, we're tight today, really historically tight. And at the same time, in this moment, we're looking at potential for some very significant disruption, you know, just in the next few years because of automation and AI. So it's like it's confusing maybe, but we're bringing these two kind of realities into the same moment. Like we're way short. We need a lot of people. When we talk about there's a worker shortage at low, medium, and high skill, that's true. You know, we're the largest number of openings for bachelor and above, with like registered nurses, occupation managers. For those requiring associate's degrees, preschool teachers and paralegals are in greatest demand. And for those with some college post-secondary credential, truck drivers, teaching assistants, bookkeepers, nursing assistants, like in terms of real jobs. Now, some of the jobs that we're shortest on right now are also the jobs that are most likely to be either disrupted or eliminated in the next 10 years and possibly sooner. So bookkeepers, for instance, the McKinsey Global Institute, the think tank for McKinsey & Company, did a report on the future of work and identified bookkeepers are a very vulnerable occupation. And they're predicting over the next 10 years, 900,000 bookkeepers in the U.S., their jobs will go away. Those jobs pay about $39,000 a year. The good news is that people that have those skills can quite quickly be retrained to get jobs that are not going away, like insurance underwriting, loan officers, credit analysts, and those jobs pay on average $65,000 a year. So this is not all bad, but it goes directly to the how will we anticipate this change that's coming? We know it's coming, right? We at a pretty specific occupational level at this point. We can see it coming. And what can we do now to position and adapt our approaches to workforce development, but higher education and worker training within the workplace to accommodate this? Because we're not going to wait. You can see where the jobs are going to be anticipated to go away. This is from the McKinsey Global Institute, a poll from Minneapolis, the Minneapolis region specifically. And so you can see, you know, we're looking at major reductions in office support, low-level production work, and in food service. So you know, a lot of the like early rungs in a career are going away. Like the bottom rungs of the career ladder, we're anticipating will be removed by automation in the coming decade. And that's, again, a real challenge for us in thinking about what are our strategies around workforce if you don't have a BA or above. There is major job creation, so it's not like there isn't opportunity. But again, it continues at the high end especially, and then in some areas where it's very human-focused, like personal care aides, that aren't compensated today particularly well. Quick focus on tech. And this sector is important because it is growing jobs, and jobs at all skill levels that pay pretty well, quite well in some circumstances. So, you know, we have a breakdown, which I could provide to the council, about there are more than 50 different kind of occupational codes that are within our definition of technology. But you can see here what the earnings look like in St. Paul and the region as a whole, and what the concentration of jobs look like. We have done some kind of heat mapping of where tech workers live and where tech jobs are. And frankly, in this metro, it's very heavily concentrated in the southern suburbs, many of which are pretty proximate commuting-wise to downtown St. Paul. But the focus on full stack and the focus on tech hire strategically, based on this data, makes a lot of sense, because having a higher concentration of tech jobs in St. Paul specifically will be a boon to the economy and to residents. And then just quickly, you know, what is the Green Street Partnership doing in response to talent and workforce? What I'm doing today is part of what we're doing, tracking the change, communicating it so we can work together to adapt. We're also working on the migration of professional talent through Make It MSP. We're working with a number of partners throughout the region to build an inclusive talent pipeline through this Connext initiative, which I'll mention, and then modernizing our workforce development systems, especially the public systems, incredibly important, and Andrea is going to talk a lot more about that. Make It MSP, just quickly, you have heard about this. It has won the nation's award as the best regional talent retention attraction effort. And it's because it involves hundreds of different organizations and thousands of people across this region working together. This is at scale. This is supporting some of the really positive demographic change we've seen in terms of migration. There's been a 265% increase in the net migration of millennial talent in the last 2 years of data. And that's a combination of better retention and better attraction both. And we're seeing improvement in the most recent data in the retention of professionals of color, which is very positive and something we've been specifically focused on as a region, and that's incredibly important. There are a lot of resources that the city can use as an employer through Make It MSP that we'd love to talk more about, and then just ways that the city can help engage and amplify this work. And then I wanted to point out Connext MSP, because you may not have heard about this. This hasn't kind of fully been launched, but the Minneapolis Foundation, Xcel Energy, U.S. Bank, the Itasca Project, Make It MSP have been quietly working for a few years to turn those 14 college and career-ready programs, including Right Track, but Genesis Works and College Possible and all these, into a pipeline. So if you're a student and you've gone through one of those courses, and sometimes people do multiple programs, and you've done what you need to do, you qualify yourself into a community of opportunity that we would call Connext. Because the idea isn't just that you have a great high school exposure, it's that you get connected, then you get a great internship, you enroll in some sort of post-secondary education, you graduate, and then you get a job here. And there are over 60,000 young people, 100% low income, over 85% students of color, who have gone through these programs in this region over the past 8 and 10 years. This is a huge wedge of everything that we want to do together. This is going to be really, this is proving to be very hard to build, because it's about bridging high school and like the higher ed space and the full-time employment space, and that's not a system. And I mean, and we not engaging employers, like that's tricky, but we're working on that. The hardest thing is engaging people who are 19, you know, when they're 18 and 19 and 20 and 21, and staying in contact and offering them something valuable enough to be connected to. But we'll bring everything we've got to bear, but it's not easy, but it's a huge opportunity.
And I think we know, like, and that we always grew up here, and it's not what you know, it's who you know. And so when you start building these networks for folks and they start to know people, they can leverage that as well. Ms. Anker.
Thank you. It is really important work, and I'm glad you're doing it. Can you just say a little bit more about what it actually is?
Mm-hmm. So, to the Council President's point, it is a focused network. So right now, there's a digital platform called Connext that has been built as a kind of like an MVP. We've got over 3,000 students who have come out of those Right Track and Step Up and others who have kind of signed up for the platform. And that gives us an opportunity to share internship opportunities, peer-to-peer mentoring, other mentoring opportunities, anything that we'd want to engage people with once we have that community becomes possible. And that 3,000, we want to be 6,000 and 10,000 and 20,000 and 50,000. This has been kind of bootstrapped over the first couple of years because putting together the business model for some of this is not 100% clear, so it scales. But the digital plus in person, the original idea was let's build a digital platform, but LinkedIn spends billions of dollars a year on a digital platform that people who are 19 don't really use. So we have to have another idea. And it's this combination of that digital interface, which gives us scale, and the face-to-face events and invitations and the cohorts and communities that actually make it sticky for people. So we believe this has to work. I mean, it's too important not to work. We believe that it can. Final slide. Just to show, what's most important to the future of our region, we've identified like the 9 key objectives, and skills and workforce is certainly one of those. These are connected and they're interdependent. So we know that we will create more jobs and then more investment when we have more skilled workers. We know that when we increase our mobility options, we make it more possible for people to get to work, which will build our workforce and help with jobs. Including all races and opportunity, racial inclusion has to be a strategy in each of those areas and across. So we need to start, and I think it's relevant for this conversation, how do we start thinking about these things as connected and related in terms of problem solving? Because there's not enough money or time to solve them separately. And that's not actually how anybody's lives work, and that's not how the economy works anyway. So it's a push to us to become even better problem solvers. Thanks.
Just another housekeeping for people who haven't been in this room since we renovated. There is also a TV screen down here below the table where people are presenting. So if you notice the council members looking down, kind of disinterested, we're not. We're reading along, and that's the same as you're seeing up there, but it's just down here. Mr. Tolbert.
Yeah. Before we switch, I just want to say one thing. Mr. Frosch, I know there's been historically some tension with the city of St. Paul and greater MSP, but I just want to say, under your leadership, our partnership has been fantastic, and I'm really grateful for all the work that greater MSP and partnership has had, not only in the Greater Metropolitan Workforce Board, which we're about to hear about. You guys did a lot of heavy lifting to get that off the ground. And a lot of the staff work when we didn't have staff members, but also your partnership, which you sit on full stack. That's been very helpful, and I really like how the relationship's going right now, and I appreciate that because I think your vision and the stuff that you're focused on is really not only going to help the region, but particularly going to help St. Paul, and I'm grateful for the partnership that we have right now, and I just, for the benefit of my colleagues, since we've worked together a lot, I want to say it. I appreciate that.
I appreciate that, Council Member. And just quickly, some of the biggest opportunities the region has over the next couple of years are in St. Paul. So we're excited to be working together.
Great. So I believe we are turning it over to Andrea.
Great. Thank you. Well, good morning, everybody. Thanks for this opportunity. I obviously will be talking about the Greater Metro Workforce Council, which indeed is a partnership, and it's relatively new in its evolution and execution, and it is focused on really a number of folks recognize we have a regional economy, we have regional workforce shed, and so how do we begin to look at not only the good work that's already happening, but what else do we need to be doing? What do we need to be doing differently to address these really significant challenges that we have? And so this group really has come together, and more recently, I would say over this past year, has really gotten clarity around roles, strategic initiatives, and begun to execute. And so that's here what I'm here to talk about today. So if you look at this mission, really as we saw the value add and what it is that we needed to be focused on, it was building and enhancing a workforce system that will address these talent shortages that you've been hearing about, as well as ensuring that we're supporting inclusive growth and prosperity. And I'd like to present this visual because I think there's often questions around, so where do we fit within some of the existing workforce system? And so we know that some of the system exists in terms of Federal Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act. There's the state board, the Governor's Workforce Development Board, that has statutory authority over that. Then there's the local workforce boards that do that heavy lifting around determining and oversight of those state and federal dollars and really running and partnering on those programs that are delivering that direct service to folks, positioning them for today's economy. And so as we came together, it was then really looking at those strategic initiatives. What else do we need to be doing? What do we need to be doing that's going to really support that inclusive growth and ensure that we're positioned well in this region? And as part of that, early on, I want to recognize both Commissioner Carter, who's chairing the council right now, and Commissioner Tolbert, who's a part of this work as well. There was a recognition that there was value in being an integrated partner with the Center for Economic Inclusion. And so we're grateful for that partnership. It's one of many partnerships, but in part because it allows us to accelerate the work through that thought partnership. The positioning that they have nationally has helped us position as we're working with our two cities of St. Paul, Minneapolis, Ramsey County, Hennepin County on a $3 million proposal now to JP Morgan Chase. That's convening that we're able to do with them. So as we began our retreat back in, I think it was April, one of the key pieces we looked at, and you heard a little bit about this from Peter, is what are our labor shortages and where are those kind of key levers as we move forward? And so if we're just talking about the metro area, we're still talking 62,000 people that were short through 2020. You can see here the state number is obviously very concerning. And as we then looked at the levers and really where we felt we were well positioned, it was around this equity piece. And so you'll see a lot of our strategies around how do we make sure that as our demographics are shifting, as our economy is changing, that we're really driving the change that we need to see. And so one of our key strategies is around employer-led solutions. And so what we've begun to do is partner with real-time talent, utilizing an approach and tool to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation that's currently working with 26 states around bringing employers together. So in the case of older adult services, we're now working with 9 employers in our region to really map out what are their key occupation needs. So they've identified certified nursing assistants first, really look at their projections in terms of retirement, new hires, the skills that they're looking for, and from there begin to dig in around their hiring policies and practices, and bringing in the education partners, the workforce partners, to say what are those set of solutions regionally that we need to be doing to help ensure that their talent sourcing needs get addressed. Similarly, we're embarking on plans for expanding some of the corridor work in healthcare with health partners, Fairview, and we hope North Memorial. And then in the public sector, there was a need to come in and convene work that was already happening. And so in November, we're bringing together the HR leaders with the city of St. Paul, Minneapolis, Hennepin, Ramsey, and parts of the state. And we're expanding that table to other parts of our region to say, how do we think about those talent sourcing solutions together? How do we dig in on some of those hiring practices and policies to ensure that our public sector is positioned to really leverage the talent in the region? And then, of course, the information technology, the J.P. Morgan Chase proposal that we're working on, the members at the table, the two mayors really galvanized opportunities in IT and the urgency in IT. We're also thinking about potentially where do we look at a connective tissue with manufacturing as well. And then lastly, we were a partner with the two cities and county around expansion of MSP Tech Hire as well, and being able to leverage additional resources to support that expansion. Another key part of the work, as we talked about, also sometimes needing to change our systems to modernize them, is this partnership we have with Minnesota State. We were able to work with them in bringing in $350,000 from Lumina Foundation that they were able to secure to support what's called the All Learning Counts Initiative that's really focused on two main pieces of really reform. One is, how do we ensure that people who are receiving training in a career force location, in a community-based organization, can earn post-secondary credit and begin to accelerate that pathway towards that certification that is relevant today? So that's about building hope, lowering tuition costs, and really creating the kind of institutional change that we need to see in our Minnesota State system. The other key piece of this work is really eliminating the barrier that we have seen with AccuPlacer, so that assessment test into getting into Minnesota State, often for people, particularly people of color, has redirected them into developmental ed and in many cases used up critical state and Pell Grant dollars and not allowed them to advance as needed. And so we're saying, how isn't necessarily an effective indicator of post-secondary readiness. Research shows this nationally. So now we're in conversation and work around what's an alternative assessment, much like they have moved to in the K-12 side of moving towards multiple measures. And how do we make sure when somebody isn't ready that they're not going into developmental ed, but they're going back into the community and getting ready and then redirected back into post-secondary? The other key piece that our council members really galvanized around was policy, recognizing this is about system change. So what are those key policy levers, particularly at the state level, and how do we bring together a table that begins to look at what those levers are, create education in the community around how we move those levers, and then begins to create some of the tools to help those coalitions that exist in moving those policy levers forward. So we've got adult basic education, higher education, of course, our workforce partners at the table represented through the Minnesota Association of Workforce Boards. We've got our business leaders and associations at the table, all to really look at what is it that we need to be doing that we're not currently doing, and how do we learn from other states and regions? And then lastly, our two strategies that we're hoping to get greater clarity on as we move into 2020 that we're still in the information gathering stage on. One, we heard from our employers around the table, and we had research that showed that in many cases only, I think it was about, maybe around 33% of folks statewide were utilizing the workforce system and were aware of the workforce system. So how do we begin? But 48%, when they heard about it, were actually, yeah, we'll make that part of our talent sourcing solution. So we know now the state has rolled out in partnership with our workforce development boards, career force, they're part of this employer team. How do we leverage that? And then what else do we need to be doing to ensure that our employers know what resources, know how to get navigate those, and really are able to source the talent that they need? And so really beginning those conversations with them. And then we were able to also hear about innovative efforts happening through the county to help people advance, build skills, navigate some of the benefit cliffs. And we wanted to make sure that as that innovation happens, what's the regional mechanism for sharing, for scaling, for sustaining that work? Where are there policy levers that we can help support? And so we're gathering information to better understand the value that we can play there. But we know it's critical. And then lastly, this just shows some of the progress we've had this past number of months. We've been able to leverage additional resources to support and launch sector efforts in key sectors. We've been able to develop our own strategic priorities that we're now beginning to move forward. We've been able to galvanize members of our community, leaders in our community, around submitting one proposal to JP Morgan Chase. For those of you who aren't aware of the history, last year we had three proposals go in. That was not received well. Doesn't mean that there weren't good efforts there, but we're working with the guidance that we got from them around how we better position ourselves for those funds and investments moving forward. And then similarly, the higher ed piece, the work with employers, and then the last piece I want to note is on Monday, we're looking to endorse what has been a long effort to develop regional goals and indicators to really set that North Star of where it is that we need to be economically competitive as a region, to make sure that members of our community are positioned for the opportunities of today and tomorrow. And so we will be endorsing those goals. We've been partnering with Greater MSP to really look at how do we ensure that that feeds into their regional goal efforts as well. And so, and then another partner in this work has been the Brookings Institute. So we hope to come back and be able to share more information with you on that.
Wow. I just have to say before we move on to Ramsey County Workforce Solutions that I'm really tracking the progress and the change of mindset and the kind of less, I don't like to use these overused terms, but siloed. Like when I served in Ramsey County, that was the Workforce Solutions. That was my observation. It was like everybody's doing good stuff except for it's not connected to anything. Mm-hmm. And so there that I didn't think the results were there, but everyone was doing good work.
Yeah.
And so just to hear the way that that we're hearing externally and that you're leading internally to knit those things together and then measuring our progress is really – it's a huge change from what we've even heard 2 years ago. So this is really heartening. Not that we don't have a lot of work to still do, but just acknowledging that progress is very evident. Ms. Nanker.
Thank you. Going back to Mr. Frosch's presentation with the 188,000 worker shortage, there are two sizable groups of people who are not participating in the labor force. One is parents of young children who can't find childcare that they can afford. And second is people coming out of incarceration who have lots of barriers to finding employment. And I'm just wondering if you could speak, and maybe we'll hear about this also in the county's presentation, specifically about how those groups are being addressed in the workforce planning.
Yeah, so it's a great question, and I'm sure Lynn will be touching on this as well. I think part of it is even in the JP Morgan Chase conversations, and part I think, Lynn, you provided such strong leadership there of just recognizing, like, here's our opportunity, right, is looking at these populations that are too often sitting at the sidelines of our economy. And so that's when I talked about IT and potentially going into manufacturing, it's really with that intention of how do we think about different members of our community and what industries and opportunities, how we can really position them for success and make sure that our labor market needs are being met. So I would also just add, I think similarly, the work in the higher ed space, our policy work has to have that same intention. And so it's about removing barriers and making sure that those systems are working better for segments of our community that often it has not historically worked for.
Ms. Prince?
I'm fine right now.
Okay. Great. Thank you. All right. Well, then I think we will move on to Ramsey County Workforce Solutions with Ms. Becker. And it looks like Holly's just changing over decks.
Five decks, yeah. Well, good morning, council members. Thank you for having me. I'm just so excited to be here. Really see this as a new chapter in our relationship between the county and the city and our workforce work. And I've just been really, really honored to be able to be out in the community in St. Paul and meet so many people who are doing such great work. And as Councilmember Brenneman said, you know, just being able to weave that together is just a really important work before us. So I'm going to spend some time this morning just wanting to introduce just a little bit of our work, myself, talk a little bit about our Ramsey County Workforce Solutions alignment so you can see what's changed in the county. Some of you probably have been aware of that. I'll probably go through all of this very, very fast and then
a real brief overview of our services to businesses and job seekers, which hopefully you're somewhat familiar with. But where I want to spend the most time is really digging into the partnership and innovation spot, where we can talk a little bit about how some of these ideas that we've been kind of had the foundation laid so well here on a regional level, how we operationalize some of those goals and in terms of how we actually serve people in the city of St. Paul and in Ramsey County. So, again, I'm just crossed over my six-month mark. Really just want to thank Councilmember Tolbert, your PD Interim Director Kristen Guild for their wonderful leadership on our Ramsey County Workforce Board, but also just their patience and willingness to guide me through the transition in working with the city. Been really, really grateful for that. I've had the chance to meet with several of you individually as well, and that invitation is available to any of you that I haven't met with as well. In the county, we've done some reorganizing, and you might be aware of some of it. It used to be more of a structure where we had 30 departments all reporting to a county manager. We've gone to a service team structure, which actually bodes really well for the work that we want to do, as Peter alluded to, in terms of human capital development. We are strategically, as Workforce Solutions, not seated in health and wellness like we would be in some other counties. I think this was a strategic placement and a right one, in that we really see people just as important as infrastructure. We are aligned with community and economic development. We are aligned with our public works, our libraries, in a real strategic way where there's less silos around that work as we all report to the same deputy county manager. I think it maximizes efficiencies. It helps us to see gaps and certainly increases our business engagement as we work with businesses across the board. And I guess my commitment to the city of St. Paul is I want to be able to work with your PED department just as closely as I'm doing with our county community and economic development, because I think that alignment is very, very important and it works for a lot of things that we'll be talking about today. So workforce is a driver of economic development because it's the people that end up doing the important work of building an economy. And I think where the dichotomy has come for many years and in many agencies is that they're not always the same goals. Sometimes they're shooting for different things. Economic developers are just trying to create jobs, build infrastructure, often, you know, really on that high-end talent recruitment. And Andrea's right. I'll be the one at every table and every meeting I'm talking to that are speaking on behalf of your residents who need opportunities and make sure that their voice is heard and make sure that every opportunity that, you know, we're working on when it comes to training and workforce efforts, there's a way to weave opportunity for all within that work. And so, you know, our job is to get people into jobs, helping people keep jobs, obviously, develop those skills, increase those earnings. But I don't think these two are mutually exclusive things, because as you see, with this very tight job economy, you know, we need to be intertwining these two, because these are the folks that need to work for our communities and for our businesses. So we need to figure out how to best intersect this as a community. And this is hard work, because it actually isn't always aligned. Real quick, just so you just have a real broad overview, and I can certainly come back another time if you want to dig more into programmatic stuff. Again, I really wanted to do this level setting on the partnership piece, but we do have 80 employees that work in Ramsey County on behalf of our department, providing job service, work services, workforce services to the citizens of Ramsey County and City of St. Paul. We have 3 Career Force centers now that they're branded. One at our East Building on Kellogg, the Fairview and University location, and then one in North St. Paul. Each year, we have about 11,000. It's gone down a little bit in the last year, probably about 10,000 in kind of enrolled job seekers where they're signed up for a program. And then we have about 1,000 visitors a month at the Career Force Centers.
Before you flip slides,
yeah.
I just want to
pull
attention back to the first bullet point and just kind of just when I read that the Ramsey County's Workforce Solutions is focused on training to businesses and residents of Ramsey County, including the city of St. Paul, mm-hmm. sounds like it's just kind of a bit part. And I always like to remind everybody that we're 56% of Ramsey County, which is very unusual.
Yep.
I mean, and that 50% of our census tracts are in poverty. Mm-hmm. So the work is not just including, it's like focused.
Sure.
And so obviously it's just a word choice, but I do think – Half of Workforce Solutions is appointed by the mayor, and it is a collaboration.
It is. It is. Yeah, and I apologize for that if it seems miscommunicated. I put it that way more to make sure people realize that it includes the city of St. Paul, but that's, well, you know, your comments are well taken, and we'll restructure that. So
yeah.
Thank you.
I understand that that it's in practice it's happening,
mm-hmm.
but I do.
Mm-hmm.
It's astounding how much of Ramsey County is St. Paul.
Absolutely.
So that partnership is important. So
mm-hmm.
thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Again, we just had a ribbon cutting at the Career Force Center on University in Fairview. That was just a couple weeks ago. And I think to what Andrea was alluding to, you know, this whole effort was really around the fact that many people might vaguely know of workforce system programs or locations, but to be able to have a statewide brand will be a real step in the right direction under Deed's kind of leadership. Again, there's lots of background information that you probably do know. You know, the state is divided into these 16 workforce development areas, and ours is all of Ramsey County. And then also most of our funding comes through Deed and DHS, and we are a 96% grant-funded department. And just as I told our county board, I mean, I don't like to dwell on the fact that that is very prescriptive and sometimes very challenging. I find that my job is to find a way to make that work for our community, so, and find opportunities for that to work. And so I think you can oftentimes look at it as the, you know, glass is half empty, but it is actually half full. So real quick snapshot of all our programs. If there's something here that just jumps out at you, we certainly could talk about it. Some of these are mandatory programs. Some of these are voluntary programs. But obviously, as one of the council members mentioned, you know, all the women that have children that are on our public assistance programs, they're in a mandatory program that have, you know, they're getting workforce programs delivered to them. People who are on SNAP, food stamps, now it's a voluntary program, so they're able to elect to get more months of SNAP if they're engaging in workforce training programs. Dislocated workers, another program. So I don't know if you want to get into some of that detail, but we can certainly come back if you want after we get to some of the partnership conversations.
I know Ms. Yeah. Baker had a question, and
sure.
This is to your point earlier. This is part of the 96%.
Absolutely. This is all the 96%.
Ms. Baker.
Yeah.
Going back to that slide about you mentioned grants limit our flexibility.
Sure.
Is that unique to Ramsey County? Do other counties fund their workforce development programs more out of general fund dollars that give them more flexibility? How do you compare to other?
I would say we are definitely on the more highly grant-funded county, but most counties are. I mean, like, there's a few exceptions. Like the city of Minneapolis, for example, they put a lot of levy dollars into their program, so they're able to do a lot of different things. But most counties are. Some are even at 100% grant-funded. I would say we're probably average in the metro area for sure, out of the other ones like Dakota or Hennepin. So, and those are federal and state guidelines on that money. So it's not, you know, everyone has the same guidelines basically around the state or nationally around some of that money.
I think to the point about not looking at it as a challenge, which
yeah.
it is,
but
a lot of the funding programs from the federal and state government have very clear
eligibility guidelines.
And guidelines, and there really isn't much beyond what's in there that we can do, and I appreciate like kind of pushing the boundaries and figuring out like where the flexibility
yeah.
is. Again, you know, when I was on workforce, it felt like we focused a lot of attention on that stuff that we had to do. And it was like the checkbox stuff as opposed
Absolutely.
To what are the things that we
sure.
could be doing.
Yep.
But that is an interesting, I mean, if only 4% isn't grant funded, mm-hmm. then you're really working on the periphery of a lot of these mm-hmm. Programs and your
mm-hmm.
budget.
Yeah, but sometimes like, you know, and we'll talk about like, you know, the St. Paul EMS, for example, we're going to be doing this is our partnership slide, but a new cohort, right? Some of that is not a result of going around what's eligible. We're just going to build, your program has the same eligibility pretty much of some of our programs. But what we're able to do is hear from your fire chief that said, we actually want to extend that age to 30. So now what I'm doing is we're going to take two different funding streams and be able to braid it together to be able to have a whole class, right? So it's not necessarily maybe the funding's changed, but it's the way you look at how you use it and how you glue it together. So that's an example.
I love
yeah.
that. Thank
so,
you.
So these are our business services. We do career fairs. We
encourage businesses to kind of host work experiences. And I can talk to them about this either now or a little bit later, but I'll just mention it with this. It's this incumbent worker training, which we are setting aside some dollars so that businesses, small businesses in Ramsey County, will be able to leverage some additional training for employees who are entry-level employees to get additional training. And then if they can prove a certain percentage of wage increase, then they're getting that training at really pennies to the dollar. So like a $2,000 training might only be end up costing $100 or something, you know, depending on kind of how the programs will lay out. So we're in the process of building that for 2020, and we would be looking for the city to help promote some of that to small businesses. We offer layoff services, labor market information. We do have a fairly robust job posting web portal, but the county is actually launching a brand new economic development landing page with a lot of information around economic development, and we are going to be, the workforce piece is going to be the kind of the next iteration of it, and I'm really excited to be building a job match portion of that that will probably, you know, I'd love some feedback from your staff. We'll work closely with your PD department, but we want people to be able to find jobs in neighborhoods. We want people to be able to find jobs along the Green Line. Like, you know, I mean, I think there's creative ways of more localized job search. I certainly agree that we live in a regional workplace marketplace, but I also think that people desire to work and live in their communities, and that's good for communities. And so to be able to give more tools for people to be able to make those connections, I think is something that we can be a part of. And we also do a fair amount of workshops as well for businesses around and workers around the gig economy, around how to support a global workforce, and kind of like what you were saying, you were asking about, you know, around these, some of these more challenging labor, untapped labor pools. It's really employer education. And so for us, that's one of the initiatives that the Workforce Innovation Board really wants to take on this year, is how can we be more proactive and maybe partner with our colleagues at CEI and really help businesses understand what inclusive hiring practices really are. So.
And I, in my previous career in marketing and communications, I know I recall that the analytics always showed that the number one site that folks visited on web pages was job postings.
Absolutely.
Again and again and again.
So I don't think I need to go a ton into the workforce snapshot because I think Peter and Andrea did a great job, but I think I just will confirm that, you know, we have these changing demographics, you know, the aging worker, really diverse worker pools. You're going to, I think you've heard or you will be hearing from your demographer, you know, you've got 25% millennials that live in St. Paul. That changes the types of employees that are in your city. The move toward a minority-majority city. These are all like the lenses by which we should be analyzing our workforce efforts. Peter spoke really great about kind of the future of work, the need for digital and tech literacy. We've been, you know, in touch with your library, the ABE, you know, North Star Digital Literacy, just trying to understand how we can make sure that that's delivered in a way that we can elevate and co-create together around tech and digital literacy. And obviously automation. There's just a huge amount of job change when it's going to come around to automation, and we want to make sure we're building that in to the work that we're doing. And so we're part of an evolving educational ecosystem. I think Andrea was alluding to that. I mean, people need to get training faster. Not necessarily is it a four-year degree, not necessarily is it a two-year degree. I mean, a lot of times now people can get certificates at a six-week, four-month, different rates, as you see in IT or different industries. And so and our focus always will be, and I think that aligns with the city, is this concern for the racial disparities that are in our community, to make sure that as we talk about workforce in all these different areas that we're continuing to bring to the table, how do we tie in opportunities for people who are left out of normal conversations around this area. So just in the interest of time, I think we covered a lot of this. I'm going to go right to the partnership slide. So I just highlighted the areas of partnership, and I'd be happy to take any questions, as this will probably be of interest to many of you. We've been working more closely with Right Track. Excited to be able to do that more and more. One thing I started kind of in the March timeframe, it wasn't real timely in terms of the Right Track collaboration because really they were well out of the gate. But what we were able to do is pick up some youth that actually weren't able to get matched through Right Track and enroll them in some of our programs, which I think is something very positive that we can do. We've applied for a homeless waiver to have more of our money be able to be used for homeless youth as well. And really just developing our community-based partnerships. I mean, there are so many great things happening around youth in the city of St. Paul that tie into what we're doing. I mean, you know, we went out to Junior Achievement. Really, you know, most of the people that are on our programs should be going out to Junior Achievement and getting their financial literacy. You know, we're going to be doing a new CNA cohort in January with Clues. You know, should we be offering employment guidance services at Andai Young? You know, we've been having conversations with all these folks around the city of St. Paul saying, how can we work more closely together? We're definitely trying to increase our partnerships with schools around career pathways and supporting that work. And then there's a new initiative, Ramsey County Youth Works, and we're going to bring in Right Track around that. But it's just a communications campaign. We're worried that kids, especially when we're talking about youth in our world, it's really anybody under 25, that people between the ages of 18 and 25 are not working. And we need to be able to share the message to businesses and to the community that there is a high value to ensuring that kids are working and to make sure that those opportunities are available. So it's a little bit of a marketing campaign and around a series of events. And the events will include things like helping businesses understand how to manage, supervise youth, how to communicate with youth, and then probably ending with some job fairs for youth as we kind of enter closer into the summer. Yeah.
Mr. Tao.
Thank you, Ms. Becker. Thanks for the presentation. Can you dive deeper into the partnership with the schools on career pathway and what are the measurable, what are the outcomes you're trying to achieve there?
Yeah, I think the key with the career pathways is that we want to make sure that within the schools that they're bringing back some of that career and tech ed education and to be able to support that, and then that there's a work experience on the other side, and if they seem even interested after that, that whether we provide like easy training for them to further explore that, right? Because you can't know that you want to do something until you've tried it. And so through the Department of Labor, there's an excellent program called the Youth Skills Training Program, and we're actually putting in a grant with the Youth Build Schools in the city around automotive technicians on that. But really, is the idea is if you are under 18 and you haven't actually got to try something, you will never know that you actually want to do it. So it's just the more the hands-on, the better. And so I don't know if that kind of answers your question.
Yeah, so does that mean the instructor, the teacher is sharing that information and moving those programs, or is it folks from your department that's going into the school and providing those opportunities?
I mean, I think it's both. I mean, I think our department can go in and provide labor market information to help kids with school counseling. We also provide outreach to school intern to support high school counselors in the city of St. Paul schools and I think four or five of the schools, because actually Minnesota has the worst school counselor ratio to youth than any, it's like 49 out of 50, honestly. So that's very troubling. But I think the other part is the teacher, right? So part of that grant is the teacher going to do externships into the industry in order to be able to share that knowledge back with the classroom as well.
So I'm not, I guess I'm kind of confused. So is this a program that it's already happening, or is this something that you're planning to?
Yeah, we're planning to do a program like that.
I see. Mm-hmm. And then my other part of the original questions was like, what were some of the outcome measurable that you were trying to achieve?
In order for the career pathway work?
Sure.
Yeah, well, I think
what
that
are the outcomes that you're trying, if you come back here 2 year or a year and say these are the measurable, like what would those be?
I think the career pathway work is in partnership with the school districts, and we're still trying to figure a lot of that out since I'm fairly new. We're trying to just start a lot of conversations. And again, I'd love to come back and talk to you more deeply about career pathways if you want after we get some more information from our school districts and where they need the most support, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I really like it. I think it's a great idea. And I think that I think it's important that the school's also at the table, mm-hmm. And that we have actual outcome that we're mm-hmm. trying to measure. I think that'll be really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Nelson.
I guess this is a lot to take in. I'm more like just thinking out loud and reacting, but I appreciate the efforts to align all the different initiatives here. I really am interested in figuring out, like, so much of this work is about teaching kind of human skills that you learn through, like, your accumulated life experiences. Mm-hmm. It's why access to athletics and parks and libraries matters. It's leadership development. Mm-hmm. It's identity development. Mm-hmm. It's knowing who you are as a person in the world, mm-hmm. Having places to talk about that. Mm-hmm. It's conflict resolution, absolutely. Healthy conflict resolution. It's problem solving. Like, a lot of times this topic area gets talked about as, like, hard skills and training and inputs and, like, all these things, but, like, the best, most equipped people to be in the economy are folks that have, like, that range of human skills and ability to just, like, make a way. And obviously we have to create a world where we have, like, labor protections and, you know, like, regulations around people that, like, support them. I'm not trying to say we have to just let people, like, fight their way through the world. But I am really interested in, like, where you see that type of work happening, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
like, the human absolutely. Side of all yeah. this that actually is what helps people be intuitive and navigate the job market as things are increasingly mm-hmm. weird and uncertain for, like, my generation and lots of generations after. Does this make sense?
Yeah, Councilmember. I think what you're speaking to is exactly what the WIOA, the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, actually is about, because it actually is not just about work and job experience. It's about 14 other elements. It's about leadership. It's about mentorship. It's about financial literacy. It's about an array of other things. And so when people are enrolled in one of those programs, not only do they get a work experience, but they get a counselor that actually connects them to all those other pieces. Because ultimately, if you work for 6-12 weeks in a work experience, the trajectory change of what that might do for your life, it could be a lot, but it might not be enough. And so I think that the beauty of some of that legislation that puts us into that box of having using that grant money is that there's a whole bunch of other things that we have to do with that youth, including a whole year of follow-up services. Yeah. After they've had that work experience, for example. So does that kind
yeah,
of
more like
it a
the people
bit?
Development
yes,
side
absolutely.
Of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I agree so much with what some others have said. A lot of it is who you know, mm-hmm. and then there are the concrete skills aspects, matching the jobs to the workers, but so much of the people development aspect of this gets, like, under-discussed, or I just care about lifting it up, even though I know you all think about it a lot. So,
yeah, no.
And that's from just being – I was an alternative high school teacher, and my students were multiple grades behind in reading and also had a host of other issues going on. And, like, watching them as 16, 17, 18, and some were, like, 19 and 20-year-olds then try to find work when there are all these other systems failing them. It just hits on a personal level for
yep,
me of, like,
absolutely.
What we work on with our kids. So, mm-hmm. So I appreciate getting all these updates. It helps mm. a lot.
Yeah, and I mentioned the EMS additional cohort, so we're really excited about that. We've been working really closely with your fire department. It's going to go up to age 30. We're going to start recruiting here very quickly. We're meeting next week, and I'm really excited to be able to make that happen in January.
Before you go on,
yeah.
I'm sorry, Mr. Basurio.
Oh, sorry.
I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
I represent a ward where poverty is highly concentrated, and I saw the locations where you have the training and workforce centers. Is there a way or is there a program that makes it accessible for people to get to the workforce centers, or do you have satellite opportunities where you can come to the rec centers mm-hmm. and have programs at the rec centers for our constituents and residents to take opportunity? I know as I door knock and meet with constituents, they say we have to go to Maplewood or mm-hmm. we can't make it to these other mm-hmm. locations that we have. And the other question, as I was growing up, I grew up in Mankato, and the companies would actually come to our schools and offer fellowships and because it was a manufacturing city, they would offer different opportunities at their companies. And I don't know if it was a push from the city or their county to get these companies to go to the schools. Maybe Ramsey County can partner up with a few manufacturing companies or companies that we have in the St. Paul to go out to the schools and offer internships and fellowships that they could use as they graduate from schools, and not putting the burden on the schools to have programs that they can't afford to begin. So that's just a comment.
Yeah, no, that's a great suggestion. In terms of the co-location, you're speaking our language right now, because really with CareerForce, we've really pushed back that CareerForce is not a place. It's the people they're delivering the service. And so we are moving toward a model of co-location. I was at Frogtown just Monday,
It's a beautiful building. We will have a employment guidance counselor there if that's something that at some point during the week, if, you know, looking at that youth room, that's a great location. I mean, multiple rec centers could be great locations. Libraries are a great location. We're going to be at the St. Paul Opportunity Center once a week. And we can increase that as time goes on. I mean, I think we want to try out some of these spaces to figure out where the need is and to be able to work with your staff as well to understand what are the key. We want to do it with some strategy so that we think through where the need is and what's the best timing to be at those places. And then also what services and what places is it just navigation as well? Maybe the services are, so there's a difference between navigation and actually like a satellite where actually you get, you know, a full array of services, and we still are kind of trying to sort that out with the different locations. But I think that is a model that we are excited to go to, and I think that's what I'm hearing from, you're hearing probably from your constituents as
right.
well.
And it's been a like I think it's been something that's been out there
yep.
for years.
Yep.
Just given like our, we have St. Paul and Ramsey County have great libraries all
Absolutely.
Over, and people feel safe there.
Yep.
They like to be
yep.
there. They're all ADA
yep.
accessible.
Mm-hmm.
They have computers.
Yep. yep.
I mean, so everything is there, and it's like,
yep.
and so I appreciate the fact that mm-hmm. if we're done talking about
we are
it,
done.
We're starting
yeah.
doing it.
Yeah, and we're ready doing it. We're at Arlington. We're at Central. I've been working closely with Catherine and Rebecca, and we're figuring it out. So, yep.
Yep. Ms. Nicker?
Thank you, Ms. Becker. Thank you for this presentation and for your leadership. I want to follow up on Councilmember Tao's question about the outcomes related to specifically the career pathways.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've only been here for 6 months.
Yes.
I think you presented to us like 30 seconds into your tenure, so it feels yes. like a long time, but it's only been 6 months. But we had another sort of tension-filled presentation, I would say, from the WIB a year or so ago, and one of the most alarming parts to me was that there didn't seem to be data or outcome-related information about what exactly was happening as a result of all the work. There was a lot of work going on in a lot of different areas, and then the goals and the metrics weren't really clear, and specifically with regard to things like not just getting people into a job, but how long they stayed there and whether it was making poverty wages or more than that.
Sure.
A sustainable job. So not today, but this is the first, I'm sure, several conversations. Would you be able to come back to us
absolutely.
With here are the outcomes we expect
yep.
and the data we have?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
And I can work with your staff to get that scheduled. So,
excited about the – go ahead.
You're down.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say we're excited about the IT sector because I know that's a priority for the city. Been working really closely with Mary Rick. She's amazing, doing a great job. And really wanting to partner on the MSP Tech Hire with scholarships. The eligibility criteria for your scholarships lines exactly with really what our WIO Adult program is. So it is a direct alignment. And so her and I are working right now on trying to make sure that we enroll folks in a way that spreads more opportunities to folks that are in need. I do want to go back on one thing. I just realized I didn't talk about our Pathway to Prosperity grant. I wanted to mention that because we just received this. It's a $200,000 grant, and it really focuses on the hardest to serve in our communities. It's going to be focused primarily on men of color, but it can be women or other folks as well, but that was what it was written. And it's really for people who have sixth grade-based education to start them on a path of ABE and partnership. And what's unique about this grant is that it's the first time that a grant like this was written where we brought in the Port Authority, the Midway Chamber, and the St. Paul Chamber to be our employer partners. And so I think a lot of times we have good intentions of wanting to get people into these opportunities, but we're not bringing in those business partners on the front end. And so we're really excited about that grant. And that's going to be a good alignment with our St. Paul Opportunity Center location as well. So I just wanted to call that out. So around the IT, I'll go back to that. We did receive a Pathways to Prosperity grant in IT. For the first time ever, a grant that was written in partnership, City of Minneapolis, Ramsey County, along with the City of St. Paul and Hennepin County. And so this is a $450,000 grant that basically takes the MSP Tech Hire regional in a different way. So we also received the Women's Economic Security Act grant,
which is coding for young women of color. And I was so excited yesterday to see that you had given, I think it was your STAR scholarship or award to New Vision Foundation. They're our partners on this event, on this grant. They're going to be doing all the coding training along with the onboarding at St. Paul Hub Center at the ABE. So I think it's just for the first, we're connecting all the dots along university. Since in my first 6 months, I think I did about 85 or so partner visits so far. And literally, I felt like I could just go and do a tour along the University Avenue. I mean, between all the things that are in that area that are doing things around workforce and trying to connect those dots, those girls are also going to get computers from Tech Dump and then a free year of internet from Comcast as well as a part of that program. So really excited about that. I've been going to a lot of the Mayor's Tech for All committees as well. Again, trying to bring in that voice of making sure that we're talking a lot about the folks in our communities that maybe tech would be harder for them to get into because of daycare, because they have a record, and to try to figure out how we can work around some of that in our policies and conversations with employers. We talked about co-location. In terms of county systems, we have tons of people that could use workforce support that are St. Paul residents, Ramsey County residents, that are involved in all kinds of things in our county, whether it's our foster care system, our correction system, our veteran services. And so I think we're going to be doing a lot more of that deep work internally as well. Not only are partnerships needed externally, but also internally. And then this connection to economic development. I mean, that collaboration with Kristen and her office, it is, I intend it to be as deep as you, as the city would like it to be. We've been participating as a county very strategically on the East team under the leadership of Jamie Tincher and B. Kyle, really focusing on the attraction and retention of businesses has to include all these pieces, including our workforce system. So, and then I know this is a lot of information here, but this is, I just wanted to give you a little highlight of some of the innovative programs we have. And I think this helps you think as council members how we could drive, how you can help us drive some of this to even greater change, because these are things that are working. I talked about incumbent worker training, that's coming. But this roads program is a really unique program where we are the only ones in the country that are using MFIP dollars to support the non-custodial parent around work. And so the goal around that is if you're a non-custodial parent and you're under the 200% poverty line and you have a child support case active with our county attorney's office and you have your child is enrolled in the MFIP program, you as the non-custodial parent can get employment services. And so the thought is that you will bring higher wages to your family and then also that you will just be a better parent. And so we're really excited about that. It's in its first year. We could use help to keep promoting that. And the county attorney's office is very supportive in terms of helping us maybe remove some barriers for those individuals that want to enroll in that program. And one reason why I know that this program is got some potential is that some of the moms who are enrolled in the program are the ones referring the non-custodial parent. And I just thought that was really a great testimony. Another great innovation, and I use kind of this wraparound service delivery as kind of the theme, but we know we need to get people through systems faster. The faster we get them what they need in more of a group case management, they will be able to make bigger strides on what they're needing to do. And so this FAST model, we've provided it to 300 Ramsey County residents so far, primarily African American and American Indian families. It actually, they all meet at the Goodwill, Easter Seals, and there they receive not only employment services, but they receive culturally specific services either through the American Indian Family Center or through NECAD, which is our Elder Mary Kay Boyd, who's our African-American cultural liaison. They also get community, like health navigators. They get adult mental health. And that case is managed in a group case management, and they're having great results. They're getting employed faster and in higher wages. And I can bring some of that data that you're looking for around those programs. People's Fellowship is something that's happening in the St. Paul Promise neighborhood. This is neighborhood collaboration. This is community wealth building. This is a two-generation partnership where Ramsey County is not necessarily the lead. We are coming in as a contract partner around the Wilder Foundation and also the St. Paul Promise neighborhood. But this is a situation where parents are going through certain programs and they can earn money toward bank accounts for their future as they succeed in certain goals. And so thus far, I think last year's program, we're starting the second cohort with 20 people right now. But last year, out of the 22 parents, they were able to put aside $43,000 in savings accounts between the kids for college and the adults in their savings accounts. And so I'd love to tell you more about that program, because that's a model that if we bring the right partners together, we could see how it works in neighborhoods and in communities. I talked a little bit about braiding dollars. That's a big strategy of mine. I think integration is something that the workforce system needs to move more toward. It's easy to think about, you know, this is one pile of money and it serves this group of people. This is another pile. But as communities, we got to get creative and figure out, people don't care about where the funding streams are coming from. They just want to receive the services. And so we've reorganized our whole department, actually. I no longer have a manager of our MFIT program and a manager of WEOR program. We have all integrated, because I couldn't figure out who to bring to meetings, you know, like I'm going to do a partnership meeting and I had to bring like five people, because, I mean, it's not the way we want to do business if we're thinking about residents first and really serving folks. So really deepening our economic development work. We're going to be doing a series of kind of strategic, I'm for sure you're familiar with BR&E visits, but we're going to do a HR focused BR&E visit where we're going to be meeting with the highest level decision maker in the HR side. What we're finding with those BR&E visits is that there's maybe three or four questions around workforce, and a lot of times the highest level decision maker, the CEO, whoever you're interviewing, they might not be able to really answer those questions in depth. But this is a great follow-up in terms of our East team work, our work with the chambers, is that when they hear that, we're able to make another connection and come back for a follow-up visit. And so we're excited about that initiative going forward as well. So, no, that's a lot. I know I need to come back, and I'm happy to do so.
Mr. Tao.
Yeah.
Thank you, Council President. Ms. Becker, thank you. When we talk about strategic and strategy, these wraparound services, they're really good. And it reminds me that we have an issue with gun violence in the city of St. Paul. Mm-hmm. And a lot of time when we have these gun violence, it's a symptom of an issue that we have. Like, for example, trauma, poverty, structural racism, and different things like that. And gun violence, it's a public health issue. And so I'm just curious, is the county making connection with the public gun violence as a public health issue? And then one other way to help us mitigate that is investing in young people, mm-hmm. investing in making sure people have house, home, job, good paying job. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just curious in your area of responsibility, how intentional are we in addressing gun violence as a public health issue? And your department playing a major role in that? And then because the last time I saw the diagram of the job structure for youth anti-violence, there was no staff in there. And so I'm just curious, I want to hear from you and what the county leadership might be in that, and what are some intentional things that we can partner with, because I didn't hear that sort of strategy around the conversation that we have.
Yeah, and I know the county has had conversations with the city around gun violence. Commissioner Mastrocasillo told me yesterday she had a meeting with the mayor and was having some conversations around what the county city strategy was. I think for me, it's really recognizing it's the upstream work that we're doing around our youth, right? And so it is that is exactly why I went to the Frogtown Community Center. It's exactly why I think we need to ensure that we have lots of youth spaces. Jamie Tincher and I talked about the correction ambassadors that go out and do certain work around and whether there's opportunities there. So I think there's opportunities that as we continue to talk with the city about how we can make sure workforce and this youth development work is on that upstream part of before people, find themselves in negative situations. So it's something that I think this co-location model of working with your parks and libraries, I mean, I think that's really key. So,
And I could appreciate that, and I think that's a good direction.
Mm-hmm.
I would emphasize that as we have these conversations, that we connect it to it being a public health issue.
Okay.
Because it's not a North End issue. It's not a Eastside or Roseville. It's a public issue, a health issue that impacts all of us, that has a major economic impact, right? We talked a lot about losing skilled worker. We talk about people leaving the city and working outside and different scenario and data. And so I think part of dealing with gun violence as a public health issue is to create that St. Paul is a place to work. It's safe to work here, to live here, to play here. And so I think when we talk about strategy and being strategic, I think it's important for leaders to have the big picture and then move towards that direction to align all of our resources and be accountable to those work. So.
Thank you.
Mr. Tolbert had something, and then we'll. I think we're going to have to move to our next topic, recognizing that we're going to be bringing you back. Mr. Tolbert.
Actually, this is kind of just an overall for these three presentations. I think kind of going back to what Councilperson Brenmo mentioned about being siloed, going through all these slides and all three presentations just makes me so happy because we did have a couple tense meetings a couple years ago, and the whole landscape has changed. The collaboration between all three of you, and we have three creative, innovative, and collaborative leaders, and that's what we've needed for a long time. And it's been a game changer in terms of all these programs. Ms. Tolzman was, you know, an important part of that before both of you were hired, and I'm glad you're both here, but at bringing everything together. And I think we're in such a better place. I mean, we have a lot of work to do, mm-hmm. but I just get so excited seeing all the different programs on all three slides, because that's just proof that we're working together for this greater outcome. It's, you know, there's a quote that I always like, that it's amazing how much you can get done when you don't care who gets the credit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what the change has been in all these programs, and that's awesome. I mean, we have to produce a lot of results here, but I just appreciate all three of you and your leadership in really modernizing what we're doing, because I think we're going to meet the future if we continue down this path, and it's exciting. So thank you all for that.
Yeah, that's beautifully stated. It's just been really exciting to listen to you guys. I don't know if any of you watch the British Baking Show, but I feel like giving you the Paul Hollywood handshake, because I'm just – it's so energizing and inspiring to hear. Again, we got a lot of work to do still, but this really gives me hope. So thank you so much, I think, on behalf of all of us. It's been incredibly informative, and we appreciate your preparation and your presentation and your work every day. So thank you. Okay. Well, why don't we ask you? I mean, yeah, I think we have about 20 to 25 minutes.
Depending what we do.
Oh, okay. I guess I'm looking to you. We booked from 10 to 11:30, recognizing that sometimes we end up going to 11:45-ish. Our schedule is pretty booked going from now to the end of the budget, so maybe we can go through this, and then if there's follow-up questions, we can follow up by email or follow up in a session afterwards. But I think since you're here, and since you've done your slides, let's forge ahead and try to get through a presentation.
Okay. Thank you for having us. Council President Brenmo and council members. I want to just continue the spirit of today, and I want to acknowledge the partnership in the room, and Ling Becker at Workforce Solutions and Mary Rickett Fullstack have just been tremendous partners for us in the library, because we don't have to convince them that libraries have a role. They get it and they see it, and so we can really start that conversation with what can we do together, and it's just been wonderful to have them and on board. I have with me Rebecca Ryan. She's a public services manager in St. Paul Public Library. If you don't know her, you really should. She has been the library's thought leader and implementation leader in workforce programming for about the past decade. So I will just try to fly through kind of background and overview of what we do in the library, and Rebecca will give some more specifics. So libraries exist to respond to learning and information needs of a community, and that in here in St. Paul includes workforce needs. In St. Paul Public Library, much of what we do happens under the Workplace brand. This brand and set of programming was developed in 2010 during the recession when we saw a dramatic increase in the number of requests of people coming into the library and asking for help, looking for jobs, and developing digital literacy, basic computer skills. And so when we say workplace, we're really referring to technology, education and access, job seeker support, small business and entrepreneur support, and also English language learning. The library's role in workforce development is often related to digital inclusion, and we say this because digital inclusion is deeply intertwined with economic prosperity, both for individuals and families, but also for communities and regions. And digital inclusion generally refers to kind of a three-legged stool, and that means connectivity, so ability to access broadband. It means access to affordable devices, and then also training, education, and programming to be able to use those devices and use that technology well. And the library has different roles to play in all three of these areas. Brief overview of highlights of St. Paul Public Library's work in the workforce arena. In 2010, we developed the mobile workplace model, and this is a model where we go out and we teach basic digital literacy skills to people where people are, so in community settings, often outside of libraries, and in the languages that community members speak. After doing that work for a couple of years, we identified a gap in the market for a way to quickly and easily assess people's level of basic digital literacy skills and then give them a way to communicate when they have achieved that basic level of skills. And so St. Paul Public Library, along with a number of other partners here in St. Paul, developed what is now the North Star Digital Literacy Assessment. It is currently a program of the Minnesota Literacy Council. This is a program or an assessment and credentialing framework developed here, but it is now available at nearly 800 testing locations across the United States. So it really is the leading basic digital literacy assessment in the nation at this point. And last year, as you know, we in the library, we did an extensive community learning process, and we put out a new strategic direction for St. Paul Public Library. Three of the strategic goals that we named are connected to workforce efforts, and those are to support an inclusive and innovative local economy, to ignite curiosity and build skills for an increasingly technology-driven world, and in partnership with communities, build a system-wide foundation for services to culturally and linguistically diverse communities. As we do all of our work in the library, and especially in this workforce arena, we are always striving to create learning opportunities that are responsive to our immediate local context. Again, we want to literally and figuratively meet people where they are. And so a few of those contextual elements that are always come into play for us are our 13 libraries located across the city really gives us a citywide reach and also a very neighborhood-based reach. And then, of course, our bookmobile that can help us fill in gaps between those physical locations. We also use this language map quite a bit, language spoken by census tract here in St. Paul. I know we've brought this out before you before. And just a reminder that St. Paul truly is a global city, and workers and job seekers in this city speak a variety of languages from around the world. And then finally, while it can feel like everyone has internet access, that is truly not the case. And this is a map showing the percent of households in St. Paul with cable, fiber, or DSL broadband at home. Just to zoom in on the yellow areas, 40 to 50% of households in those yellow areas do not have cable, fiber, or broadband at home. And when you think about that inequity that causes in who can look for jobs at home, who can do their homework at home, who can versus who has to go to some place during open hours, hopefully it's free, to be able to do those same things, you can start to see the connection between broadband access and a number of other inequities.
We have got to figure out a way to get Pig's Eye Lake out of the...
Right, I know.
Yeah. It's always like, oh, my God.
Yeah. And the airport.
There's a crisis in that lake. There's some of those particular census tracts that are... They never give us the right data.
Agreed.
So thank you for having us again. I'm going to take over. This is my... why is the library a part of the workforce development ecosystem slide? And this is actually the same slide that why the library is a part of the small business and entrepreneurship development slide. So that we are really there to ensure access for everyone, that we have these community roots, that we're about relationship building, that we have a trusted reputation, and that we have a learning organization with the tools and the spaces to back it up. Also, thinking about the Green Line and University Avenue, and having worked at Rondo for so many years, I feel like really what we are at Rondo Library is the social infrastructure for University Avenue. But our libraries are that in every corner of our city. And this is a direct quote from someone that we helped. They're like, just go to the library, they'll help you. So that means that we have trained staff to assist people with technology. It means that we're hopefully warm when it's cold outside and we're cool when it's hot outside, and that our computers work and that our internet functions. And that we have specific folks in our libraries, particularly our Community Technology Empowerment Program, CTEP, AmeriCorps members, and our cultural liaisons that might be able to help people more specifically with their workforce needs. I should also mention that so all of our libraries provide public access computing. They all have Wi-Fi. They all have the printer and the copier. And if you don't think anyone faxes, I invite you to come to the library. Faxes and scanners, and most have meeting room access. So we do this work in partnership, and we couldn't do it without our partners. This is a selection of them. As Ling said, we're super excited to be working with some navigators in several of our libraries and seeing where that goes. AmeriCorps and SPNN, the St. Paul Community Literacy Consortium, North Star, Full Stack, MSP Tech Hire. They do things that we're not able to do in the library, but we certainly love to refer people to the programs and services provided by our partners. So spaces. Every library has meeting rooms. Every library in St. Paul has job seekers visiting every day. And mostly they're there for the computers, but sometimes they're there for some of our other resources. It's a free place to study, to meet others. Lots of people looking for those study rooms to do their Skype job interviews, for example. Some of our tools.
Just 1 second, Ms. Dinker.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Just a really quick back on the partner slide, just to give us a snapshot, how many of our 13 libraries would you say every day or regularly have someone there to help you from, say, Ramsey County Workforce Solutions if you're looking for a job, or from one of these partner sites? I mean, how?
So we're going to get to that about more of the specific services and where they're more heavily located in some of our libraries than others. But every library you can walk in and somebody will help you with the computer, right, or the fax machine. And that's really what a lot of our job seekers are looking for is, I don't know if any of you have applied for a job online recently. It seems to me that the more kind of low level it is, the more technological hoops they make you jump through. So some of the tools that we're talking about, for example, the Nicholson Workforce and Innovation Center, it's a free adult makerspace. It has a classroom, a lab, a recording studio, and specialized software and equipment. You might find it for youth at the Arlington Hills Community Center CreateTech Studio. You might find it at Rondo with things like a 3D printer.
And Nicholson is the one that we were all shocked to learn about.
Yes, downtown.
Downtown.
One of the places that Ramsey County Workforce Solutions has a navigator present. So some of the programs that are library-driven and library-led are tech and computer classes. There's drop-in help with one-on-one appointments available. English language learning, GED study, English conversation circles. They're all available through our online calendar. I won't go too far into that. But here's a snapshot of what's going on this week at the library in terms of workforce development and job seekers and tech skills. So we're doing a lot of experiments with different kinds of pathways and certifications. So Hired is currently leading their office admin certification training at Rondo. It's going really well. It's great to have it. We have the computers. We have the space. They have the people and the trainers. But as you can see, it's a really range of options, and that's something that's different than it was back in 2010 when it was all basics all the time. And that's something that we've really had to pivot to provide. You know, when we talk about digital literacy, that needle is always moving for people here. There's always something new to catch up with, particularly if you don't have regular access at home. Continuing to learn those skills and continuing on that career pathway is really difficult. So we're trying to meet people where they're at, and they're all over the place. So I would be remiss if I didn't talk about some of our online resources. We actually, through JobNow, you can upload your resume and get pretty immediate comments on it and help. You can do a practice interview. Learning Express, Lynda, Reference USA are actually, you can use a lot of those in your job search, and you can use it to get skilled up quickly. Again, easier if you have broadband at your house. New and developing. So right now we have Ramsey County Workforce Solutions Navigators in three locations, at Arlington Hills, at George Latimer Central, and at Rondo. And we're really in pilot mode with that. We're hoping that we might get them in, you know, if not in more locations, then more frequently at those locations. We are going to partner with them to do intakes and referrals to the Tech Hire pathway. And we actually are mentioned in yet another P2P, Pathways to Prosperity grant, in that we're hoping that we'll be able to actually offer some on-site, either beginning parts of a tech career pathway or higher level, so that we'll be referring folks out to Transcend IT and Century College as a partnership with the East Metro ABE and IT integration. So that's coming up. Grow with Google is coming to Rondo Library on October 16th. They're doing a nationwide tour of libraries, and so Rondo Library is one in Minnesota as well as in St. Cloud. And then just in terms of on the ground, we're piloting some new service delivery models. We find that the kind of traditional classroom method works really well for some people, mainly older folks. So sometimes we have one-on-one appointments. We're going to lean into kind of a learning circle, so folks can come together, decide what they want to do, and have a cohort to address some of the online learning that it's hard to get through on your own. You're not motivated to sit down at your computer or wherever you want to learn in the way that you are in a cohort, and we feel like the library is a great learning space in that way. And then more and more online learning. And just a few key stats. So our CTEP AmeriCorps members, there's fewer of them last year, but they still helped 122 people find jobs. And I should say, from an outcomes and tracking perspective, those are just the people that come back and tell us about it. We do not do a lot of heavy tracking in the library. I think it's actually one of the things that make us, you know, a low barrier to entry for people. Our Spanish-speaking cultural liaison has helped 17 people find jobs so far in 2019. And last year, we had over 1,000 visits to computer learning in Corinne. So last but not least, this is Norma. Norma is one of our, just go to the library, they'll help you. She came to Rondo looking for help in Spanish. She needed to apply for two jobs. There's a number of things about Norma that are interesting, one of which is that we don't help people apply for just one job anymore. It's now it's their second job and their third job. Norma actually speaks Spanish at a third or fourth grade level. Her first language is Mayan Mum. She's from Guatemala. Our Spanish-speaking cultural liaison thinks that Norma is the future of people who are coming to us in our community. So we helped her get an email address. We helped her, she got the two jobs. We helped her fill out the required paperwork for those two jobs. Her niece and nephew got library cards. And then she came back when she was almost fired from those jobs, and it turned out that Norma couldn't see. I don't know. So she's an example of somebody whose resilience and dedication I'm continually amazed by, because she needed to get these two new jobs because her job had switched, and so she was walking home from Keys Cafe, she lives behind Rondo, at 2 a.m. in the morning, and she could see this far in front of her face. So our cultural liaison, our social worker, worked to help get her a low-cost eye exam. We found a place for her to get her heavy-duty prescription filled with low-cost glasses, and she put them on and was like, oh, I can see street signs. So this woman was navigating all of these jobs, navigating all of this, and she couldn't see. But yet, you know, she had two jobs. She was supporting her family both here and in Guatemala. So when we talk about wraparound services and we talk about a low barrier to entry and we talk about, oh, just go to the library and they'll help you, this is, we're talking about Norma and all of the Normas in our community.
Right, because if that's her norm, you know, you don't, I remember when I got glasses and I was like, oh my God, the trees have leaves.
Yeah.
Look at that. No, but you just, that's, if your normal is this, and to be able to identify that this is a problem is a challenge. So obviously the work there is deep.
Mm-hmm.
So good, you're morning. The closer. Yeah.
Well, actually, we still have Right Track as well.
Not the closer.
So you guys want to come up?
And let's see how we do. Okay.
Yeah.
Because what I don't want to do is shortchange you. The work you're doing is incredibly important, and we're all very interested in it. So we'll work through this. Right. But we have about
nine presentations.
Eight.
No.
We're good. We're good.
So at minimum, I think we can give some good teasers and some sort of indications of outcomes. So within PED, we have an economic development team led by Mark Sunkin. I think it's still here. Oh, he slipped out. So we have a team of 10 people who are visiting businesses proactively, regularly engaging with businesses. And across all sectors, what we're hearing from businesses is really that the availability of workforce is their primary business need, their primary concern as businesses. And this is in line with what Peter Frost shared about, you know, the number one issue for site selectors is workforce. So this is front and center to our work in economic development. It is essential that we have very, very strong partnerships and non-siloed work in workforce development, across economic development. And so it's been really refreshing for me to see this new paradigm as well. I think almost every single slideshow here shows, you know, MSP tech hire and, you know, what the stats are in tech as just one way that we're working much more effectively together. There are a bunch of touch points, some of which have come up already. The primary way that that PED is directly involved with workforce is through Full Stack and MSP Tech Hire Program. So I wanted to dive in and provide some outcomes data to you all on that, since we've been working in that space for a couple years now. So I'll just spend a little bit of time on outcomes with Full Stack. The tech sector was identified back in 2016 with significant leadership from Councilmember Tolbert as a sector that we should be paying a lot of attention to with economic development, and it was identified for a number of reasons. One, we have very, very strong job growth in this sector in both the state and the metro. We're seeing a re-emergence of tech strength here in St. Paul, but that was completely below the radar. No one really knew it or was aware of it. And we have really, really engaged tech businesses here in St. Paul, which also wasn't well known, but it was a strength and an asset to build on. And I think most importantly, certainly most importantly for this conversation, we have a really significant opportunity in this sector for St. Paul residents, particularly those that are underemployed or unemployed and those that have been sitting on the silos, on the sidelines for the labor market. Ling's slide showed economic development and workforce development as two columns, and I'd say that, you know, there are often those two silos of work, but it is all economic development, and so it's crucial that we are working very collectively. And I'm always delighted to hear Ling say, you know, I want to be part of your team, Kristen, and we want to be part of her team as well. So the Full Stack program has four strategic pillars: people, promotion, places, and industry, focusing here on people. We're seeing a very strong demand, workforce demand, for the tech sector. In addition to these points, Forbes recently ranked Minnesota as the fastest growing state for tech jobs in the nation. And these stats that are pulled from real-time talent just super recently, showing over 40,000 job ads in the tech sector, indicate that we should be really tapping this sector to meet our goals of inclusive growth and wealth building. MSP Tech Hire, here's how it works. We're focusing on investing in people, so that they can secure good paying jobs in a growing field. And we're targeting primarily these roles with low barriers to entry. So the focus is on training programs that build transferable skills and provide people with credentials so that they have workplace mobility and are really developing their skills and resiliency. The accelerated tech training is focused on help desk and software development, which not coincidentally are the same two career pathways that rose up out of the real-time talent analysis. We have career services wraparound that have been provided by Jewish Family and Community Services, but now we have a new partner with Ramsey County Workforce Solutions, providing both career services wraparound and placement support. And then the two cities have been providing scholarships for low-income people of color and women. And we're starting to move the needle in terms of who is in these spaces in the workforce. This slide shows the comparison of scholarship recipients and non-scholarship recipients. So MSP Tech Hire is available curriculum to anyone in the metro. Most people are paying their own way, but Minneapolis has been providing scholarships since 2015. We've joined that in 2018. Now we have WIOA dollars partnering with scholarships, and we have these grant programs that Ling noticed that are also contributing. This shows that we have very strong wage growth overall for all of our graduates, but it's even more significant with those scholarship recipients. There are almost 500 employers who have hired people out of this program. 57 have hired more than 5 people. We have a few different St. Paul. That's my stop timer. The next time I come back with this, I want to see the city of St. Paul and Ramsey County as these, you know, we've hired MSP Tech Hire employees. And then I'll just close on some specific stats for St. Paul grads with St. Paul scholarships. Really significant wage increases. These are sustainable living wage jobs. And then some of the notes at the bottom about the grants that we've recently received in partnership. And Mary Rick has been working really, really hard to make sure that we have more St. Paul-based trainers that are part of MSP Tech Hire, and we're seeing some success there already and have some additional ones in the pipeline. On to the closers.
Oh, now you're the closer. Okay. And do you have a little timer going, too?
We can be quick.
Can I just point out something? Yeah. Just because it didn't get highlighted. Mm-hmm. On that slide, if you look at the Prime Academy grads, and we're talking about living wage jobs, and you know, we've done a lot to raise minimum wage, average for Prime Academy grads, and how long is that program?
That is 20 weeks.
20-week program. The average salary is $67,000 coming out. So, I mean, that's really creating living wage jobs. That's really moving people from poverty into family-supporting jobs. So that's a really exciting thing.
Yes. The mics are sounding a little bit weird, so when you start talking, I just want to make sure that we're good. So we have Erica Prosser from the Parks Department and Shana Abraham from Right Track, and we want to hear what you have to say, and then if we have to dig in, we'll either bring you back or do it by email. But it's sort of like it is the big finish. We're really excited to hear what you have to say.
Okay. All right. Well, yes, we're here to talk about our Right Track program. As you know, Right Track is the City of St. Paul's workforce readiness and employment training program for young people. The guiding principle of the program is that St. Paul youth are our asset and deserve a place in our city and in our future. Right Track has three tracks, if you will. YJ1, the YJ1 program provides foundational job skills. They're generally our younger youth. YJ2 offers more independent and project-based work, and Youth Jobs Pro. Is advanced training and certification for specific career pathways.
So what we did this summer, because I'm sure that's what you're kind of interested in, is here's some of our results. We heard from the young people about why they applied for Right Track, which was to gain experience, earn money for themselves and families, to be productive, and to build their own networks. And our impact at the end of the summer is that we worked with 108 public, private, and nonprofit partners. 93% of the interns finished their jobs successfully, which is great. There were 420 industry certificates earned. Many of those were the North Star Digital Literacy Certificates that Catherine mentioned earlier. And this is one that I'm really excited about. Well, the $1.3 million is great. But that 98% of the interns developed at least one adult reference, and 46% said that they developed three, which means that they're already starting to develop their personal networks now instead of when they're 24. And then just in case you're curious who was in the program, we had about we had 712 youth placed this summer, 90% received free or reduced lunch, 11.5% reported having a disability, so there may be young people in the program who have a disability but didn't tell us. You can see where they lived and some of the demographic breakdown as well. And then just to highlight the diversity, 39 different languages were spoken by the young people in our program this summer.
That previous slide showed the zip codes of the youth that we employed. We also handed out a map of the employer locations. That was just for YJ1, and we're going to work on updating that map so it includes the YJ2 jobs as well. Our Right Track is primarily funded through our DEED grant and CDBG funding. You may know that we had a pretty big, Shana wrote a fantastic grant application, and we had a pretty dramatic increase in our DEED award for 2019 and 2020. We previously were receiving $400,000 a year from DEED, and moving for the these 2 years, we'll receive $700,000. Yeah, very good. We also, in the past, have received money from the foundations listed on the right and are seeking, we'll continue to seek other grant opportunities. Collaboration, sticking with the theme. We have over 100 plus employer partners. The PED is one of our partners. They provide the CDGB funding for us. They also host an intern and help with employer recruitment, and we have plans to strengthen that this year. Ramsey County, it was so nice. I started, I think, a couple weeks after Ling, and we had a fantastic meeting right when I started, and I knew that she was going to be a great collaborator for us. They, as she mentioned, they provided information sessions for Right Track applicants that we were unable to place. We will be working with them on the Hire Young People campaign, and they also worked with us on the EMS Pathways Academy. Ignite After School and the Greater Metropolitan Workforce Coalition have been convening youth employment programs such as Step Up, Brooklink, Genesis Works. The purpose is so that we can all support each other's work and find other potential collaborations, such as training that we may do together. You heard a little bit about Connext. We're part of that. It's essentially an alumni association connecting our youth with employers. St. Paul Public Schools is also one of our partners. They help with our recruitment. We try to find ways to support their career academy pathways that were mentioned earlier. So students in their academy of finance
will place summer internships. We'll place students that are in that program in summer internships that match up with their career pathways. They also offer extensive support for applicants with disabilities. The library is also one of our great partners. They help with recruitment, offer space. They host our RightTrack interns. They offer computer access, and we're looking forward to further collaborations. And the fire department is also a great partner with us. They're the only program that offers a direct career pathway from your RightTrack internship into a position in the city, a job.
So some things that are going well. We believe that we're helping young people build their own social capital. I mentioned it earlier when I talked about the networks that they're building. To Councilmember Nelson's point earlier, a lot of what we do is help young people develop those soft skills that they need. So social awareness, communication, collaboration, time management, problem solving, all of those skills that you need to be successful in the workplace. We help young people do that. And a big reason we're able to do that is because of the team that we have working with our youth every summer. Our job coaches spend a lot of time actually teaching those skills, but also just developing relationships so that young people come to them when they have questions and concerns throughout the program. So that's really exciting to us. We also believe we do a little bit of employer education and support on the current and future workforce. So we do quite a bit of training on how to work with young people, how to work with people from different cultural backgrounds, and how to create supportive and welcoming job places so that when we send a young person into a place, we know that they're going to feel safe there, right? We know that most young people, or most people, if they're the only of whatever in the room, you're the only teenager, you're the only woman, you're the only person of color, that you're going to feel isolated. And so we do a lot of work to try and help make sure that employers are ready to accommodate and adjust their styles for that. And then we help young people build the actual skills they need. Mm-hmm.
So challenges and opportunities. We have more applicants than we have available jobs. We had 2,300 qualified applications for this summer, and we did not place 1,600 of those youth. There are wage impacts that are challenges for us. It's a very competitive job market, particularly for our YJ2 jobs. People can make more money working at Subway, and often this isn't their summer income isn't just pocket change. It really contributes to their family's income, or you know, it takes away you know, if they're working at Subway making more money, they can put more money away for college. There's a pretty big gender gap in our applicants. 40% of our applicants were male. They were 30% of our placements. So our plan is to have more targeted recruitment, improve our training and outreach. One of the things Shana mentioned was education to employers. We really want to encourage employers to take more than one intern next summer. If you are the only young person of color working in a work environment, that can be really isolating. And so we think we're going to focus on that. We also think one of our biggest opportunity areas, and this lines up with the data that we've seen earlier, is the city of St. Paul is an employer. We have over 3,000 jobs, and not every department hosted a RightTrack intern this year. There's also a lack of clear you know, a clear path to employment if you're a Right Track intern. We need to address some of those systemic barriers. So whether that's working with HR on providing some policy changes that would, you know, give preference in interviewing, at least for city jobs, if you've been a past participant in Right Track, or there's other opportunities for us to improve in that area. Looking forward. So we inherited a strategic plan that actually ends in 2020. So one of the big initiatives of the strategic plan was to establish an advisory board. So that is a big goal for us in this off season, is to launch the advisory board, one, so that we have one that can help us recruit new employers and keep us in touch with employer needs, but also so that they can help us develop our strategic plan after 2020. We are looking to grow and improve our work readiness training, specifically for the YJ1 youth. The YJ2 program has a pretty extensive training component. YJ1, we hear from the young people that they would like to see each other and learn more so that they feel more confident to take that next step. So we also see this as a potential way to get more young men to take the jump to YJ2 if we're helping them understand kind of the steps in the process and that they already have the skills. And then we are always looking to recruit new employer partners. And excitingly, we have been working, it's a project that started before I started, to launch a new web application to make it easier for young people and employers to sign up for the program and to track data throughout the system, throughout their participation. So an employer will be able to go onto a website, say, I'm interested. We'll get them a login. They'll be able to enter all of their information, track who their young people are, who the contact information is. So it'll streamline communications for us, which will help quite a bit.
One additional thing I wanted to add to that is we're really interested in ways that we can collaborate with the various partners on career pathways programs. So in the YJ Pro category, for example, the city has a really hard time both in Parks and Rec and in Public Works in recruiting and hiring employees that have commercial driver's licenses. So what could we be part of that solution? We're interested in exploring that. That's kind of all we have.
That's it.
Ooh, we're good.
So I heard you say during the off season, these are the things you're going to work on. And I know we're all very interested in collaborating with you on that. And we'll want to hear back when we get moving towards the on season. Mm-hmm. And so to give this, it's afternoon and I'm sure people have questions, but in order to give this ample time as you're working on this, let's stay in communication and then let's plan to hear back from you as we roll into 2020 with the changes that are in front of you and tackling some of the challenges that you've laid out for us. It's, we're very invested in the success of this program. So
thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Guild, as well. We appreciated your presentation. This is great stuff. And again, we'd love to continue to work with you on this initiative as well. So it is noon 05, and I know that folks have seen people heading out the door. So we're going to cut it short. Holly's been tracking follow-up, and we have next week we are hearing from
OFE and OTC. So.
Okay, and keep your eyes peeled. We may switch to this room, I think, just in terms of a longer presentation at this as a better format. But we'll check that out. So that's what's in front of us next week on our path to the budget. thank you very much today for your presentations, and we will be adjourned.